Let's go ahead and move into another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word by picking up our story in Genesis chapter number 19, verse 37. Now, this is the story of the destruction of the cities of the plain. These Canaanite cities were much more advanced in their sinfulness than the other Canaanite areas around them. According to the book of Ezekiel, the reason for this was because they were so prosperous, so wealthy, that they were self-centered and cared only about themselves. They were not willing to help anyone else. And I've shared with you that that is an earmark of a society that is kind of imploding. When they have more than what they need, they oftentimes get kind of bored and they start to experiment with crossing boundaries. And that is exactly what we see in these five cities of the plain. They are grossly immoral. And so God decided that this needed to stop. Now, in the process, one of the cities survived, the littlest one of them, the place called Bela to begin with, but because Lot fled there at his own request to the angels, it gets renamed Zoar. And we know where Zoar was located. It was on the southeast corner of the south bay of what is now called the Dead Sea Valley. And after Lot had fled there, he didn't stay there. He went up into the mountains of what is now Jordan, to the northeast from Zoar, a place which eventually is going to be called Moab for the reasons we're going to read about today. And he hides out in a cave, won't let his daughters be around any young men of marriageable age. And after some time has passed, perhaps a year or so, some people think it might have only been a few months, the eldest daughter says, "This is not working. This is not sustainable for our family tree. We can't be stuck out here in the middle of nowhere where we can't get pregnant and have babies and continue our family line. We've got to be proactive here." And so their way of being proactive was this. They waited until their cycles were exactly at the optimal moment of conception. And that can be done to time that out. And on those two subsequent nights of their no doubt synced cycles, they got their father drunk because he's the only male around. And in his inebriated state, they went into him in the darkness of night and perhaps convinced him that they were their late mom. They had sex with him and by that became pregnant. And then the story finishes with this. We're in Genesis 19:37. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab, which is Hebrew for "from daddy." Now that's rather twisted. It's kind of sick, but that's the true history. The name Moab means "from daddy." And this is the origin story for the group that is called the Moabites. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. And they will eventually occupy this exact place where Lot and his daughters are living. The east side in the mountainous region to the east side of the south bay of the Dead Sea. Now the younger also bore a son and named his name Ben-Ami, which means son of my family, son of my people group, which is again rather twisted, kind of sick. And we are told that he is the father of the Ammonites to this day. Now, the Israelis first reading this are the ones coming out of Egypt with Moses, and they have passed right through this region where the Moabites live, and then the Ammonites live just a little bit to the north, northeast of the Moabites. So they know exactly who these peoples are, and they now understand, thanks to the book of Genesis, hey, these are cousin family groups of ours. And they have a really sick and twisted origin story. And it's a lot more sick and twisted when we go to the rest of the story. Let me read to you a little bit of information from 1 Kings chapter 11. And this is another sad story. It's the story of where Solomon went bad. He let his wives, which he should never have married, from a whole bunch of different people groups who worshipped a whole bunch of different gods and goddesses, turn his heart away from the one true God, which is the whole reason why they were told not to do this. You don't marry someone that is outside the true faith. It's too dangerous. So in 1 Kings 11, verse number 4, we're told that when Solomon was old, that his wives had turned his heart to other gods. His heart wasn't perfectly in attunement with he who is anymore. And then it says that Solomon went after Ashtoreth, who was the goddess of the Sidonians. The Sidonians are those that live in Sidon, the Phoenicians. Asherah was the mother goddess of fertility for them. And then he went after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Milcom is also called Molech, and both of those are a slight variation for the word king, M-L, and then a hard K sound. That's king. And so the god king of the Ammonites, and he also did this in verse 7, that he built a high place for Chemosh, which is a word that means destroyer, the abomination of Moab in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. So these two people groups had gods that they worshipped that they called king and destroyer. And so I'm going to suggest to you what happens here is that the daughters of Lot raise their boys to believe in a destroyer God. Because that's exactly what God did. He destroyed the cities of the plain. He destroyed the place where they had grown up. He had destroyed their mother, and from their purposes, destroyed their father as well, made him live out in the middle of nowhere. So they taught about a destroyer God. And do you know how the Moabites and the Ammonites worshipped their destroyer God? They did this. Every year, apparently I think, on the anniversary of the destruction of the Cities of the Plain. I can't prove that, but that's my guess. Every year, they would have a big religious gathering at which they would play very loud music, drink a lot of alcohol, get drunk, and then engage in sexual activity with the intention of causing some pregnancies. Sound familiar? Sure it does. That is how the Moabite and Ammonite family lines came into existence. Drunken sexual activity to bring about pregnancy. But here comes the twist, the part that should make you sick to your stomach. During the celebration with all that music, with all that drumming, with all that drunkenness, with all that sexual activity going on, they would take the babies from last year's ceremony, which means they would have been about 3 months old, and they would burn them alive. They would pass them through the fire. That's the phrase that you'll see in some of the places of the Old Testament. And they would honor the destroyer king by offering them these babies in place of themselves. Effectively, they raised up sacrificial humans to offer to the destroyer king. So what we see here is that Lot's two daughters start a twisted, abominable religion that is based on the idea of a God-king who destroys with fire. And the way you appease him is you give him babies that you've intentionally bred for in a drunken state. Now, that is gross. That is horrendous. And it is the reason why God warned the Israelites, the ones that are reading the book of Genesis right here, when you go into the promised land and you run across some of these Canaanites that have picked up this abominable religion of the Moabites and the Ammonites where they pass children through the fire, don't you dare do that. Don't you dare practice that twisted remembrance of the destruction of the Cities of the Plain and the start of the Moabites and the Ammonites. Don't you dare do that. And it is also why later in the Old Testament, God specifically says one of the reasons that he destroys the Israelites out of the land is because they didn't listen to him on that. And they killed his kids. They passed them through the fire in this pagan ceremony that was a twisted remembrance of the just action of a holy God. So I want you to just kind of file that away. I'm sure it's impressed itself on you because of the imagery involved in it. File all of that away so that when we come across those passages later in our study that talk about giving their children to Ammon, or giving their children to Molech, giving their children to Chemosh, practicing the religion of the Ammonites and the Moabites, or passing their children through the fire. It's all about what started here with Lot and his two daughters. On to chapter 20. From there, meaning Hebron, which is where Abraham was when Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. Apparently, he doesn't want to stick around near the destruction zone. I think maybe it just bothered him so much seeing that smoke still rising on the eastern horizon for days and weeks afterwards, I think he finally said, I got to go farther away. I got to get out of sight of this destruction. It says, from there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. And so this tells us that he went south, southwest from Hebron. The Negev, as I've described before, is the northern section of the Sinai Desert. And in this area, he was probably doing his Bedouin thing of grazing his sheep and all of that. And you move from encampment to encampment as you do that. And eventually, he sojourned in a place called Gerar. Now, Gerar was probably down not too far from the Mediterranean coast. It is on a wet weather stream system that drains the region that Beersheba is part of. So if you go to a map of Israel, use Google Earth or something, locate Beersheba, and you'll see there's like a little wet weather stream passing by it. It eventually dumps into the Mediterranean, south of Gaza. And Gerar would have been somewhere near the lower portion of that river system. Would have been a city with walls, probably. Wouldn't have been lots and lots of people living in it by our standards, probably a few hundred. And it has a, quote, king over it. And so Abraham does something here that makes us surprised again that he didn't learn his lesson. Because he did something like this when he went to Egypt, and it didn't turn out very well. So Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. So he goes into a new region whenever he introduces himself to some of the more prominent people of the region. He says, oh, this lady here, this beautiful lady, now she's like 91, but she's still good looking. No doubt about that because everything's described in that way in the scripture. He introduces her as his sister. Now, why? Because of earlier, he said he was afraid that if he introduced her as his wife, unscrupulous people would kill him to marry her. But if she's his sister, then these people, in his mind, would be interested in getting on his good side so that he would agree to a marriage between them and her. It's kind of goofy, we understand that, but as I've said before, our heroic people don't always make the best choices. Well, Abimelech, whose name, by the way, literally means my father is king, so it seems to be a hereditary title. So Abimelech, the king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Now that's something similar that happened before. Abraham overestimated the effect of her being a sister would have on men of great power. I mean, Pharaoh just basically assumed, I can marry her. And apparently Abimelech, even though he's a smaller fish in a smaller pond, it's his pond. And so he assumes that he can take her as a wife. So he takes her, puts her in his house, in his complex, intending to have a marriage ceremony later. He probably has already given dowry items to Abraham. But then we read more details this time of how God intervenes. Because from time to time, even though God, I think, prefers to let our free will choices play out on their own, regardless of how they might negatively impact ourselves and others. If they are going to have a very negative impact on his overall mission of salvation for the most people, then he's going to intervene. And so Sarah is in the process of becoming, I should say, the mother of the line of Jesus Christ, the Savior. And so she is off limits to anyone except Abraham. So God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." Now, a lot of times we read this and we think that God is threatening to kill him that night in the dream. I'm going to give you a different understanding here. And you'll forgive me if I have to be a little bit kind of graphic in this and maybe cross lines that some of you are not comfortable with. I think God is basically telling him, the reason you have erectile dysfunction is because you have stepped over a line that you shouldn't have stepped over. You've taken into your household and intend to marry a woman that is already married to another man. And Abimelech says back to God, well, first of all, Moses points out here, Abimelech had not approached her, meaning he had not had any sexual relationships with her. So he said, "Lord, are you going to kill an innocent people?" Notice, he immediately throws it out into the plural, that it's not just him that's going to be affected by this, but a whole bunch of people. And that's because I think, again, he is experiencing erectile dysfunction, and so is every male in his house, in his town, in his region. And that includes the animals. All of them they've got problems. They're not able to breed. So I think that helps us understand that we're talking about a period of time has passed here where that has become obvious to Abimelech and others. So he says, "Lord, are you going to kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'?" Because Abraham certainly did say that. "And she herself said, 'He's my brother.'" So she's going along with it. "In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Now, he has crossed a boundary by taking her without really asking permission. He just simply assumed. So he definitely crossed some boundaries there, some proprieties. But he is being honest with God by saying, "I really thought that she was available as a wife, or I wouldn't have done this. I'm innocent. I didn't do it on purpose." And so God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me." Now notice that. God says, "I stopped you from doing anything that would cross an uncrossable line," which means he kept him from approaching her in a sexual fashion. "Therefore, I did not let you touch her." And so the ED, erectile dysfunction, is the most simple explanation of what stopped him from following through. "Now then, return the man's wife, for he is a prophet." This is something that we need to remember about Abraham. He is counted as a prophet from God because God speaks to him and through him passes messages on. So he will then pray for you and you shall live, as in a people group. I will restore everything the way it needs to. But if you don't return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all that are yours. And that's the dying you shall die. It's the, oh yeah, you'll definitely be done. Your whole community will be over with. So Abimelech rose early in the morning, you know, first thing, and he called all his servants and told them all these things, and the men were very much afraid. And then Abimelech called Abraham and said, "What have you done to us? How have I sinned against you that you've brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You've done to me things that ought not to have been done." Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you see that you did this thing?" So we basically have here a non-believer really taking a believer to task for bringing bad things on him by his own choices. And he's right. Abraham is at the center of this. And Abraham's excuse is this. Abraham said, "I did it because I thought there's no fear of God at all in this place, and they'll kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, 'This is the kindness you must do to me at every place to which we come. Say of me, he's my brother.'" Pretty weak. Pretty weak example or excuse here. But it helps us understand how the whole process happened. Now, Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male servants and female servants and gave them to Abraham. This is above and beyond probably the dowry he had given. "And returned Sarah his wife to him. And Abimelech said, 'Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you.' And to Sarah he said, 'Behold, I've given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone you are vindicated.'" So Abimelech is clearing everything up here. "I am giving free property, or not free property, but free grazing and water rights anywhere in my watershed for your family. And I'm also giving a silver amount to show that you are completely innocent of any sort of questionable relationships. You are still pure."